Press start.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Z2 Podcast, where three friends who come together under mysterious circumstances must do what they can to save the galaxy. As a part of the rebellion, they decide that they are going to rebel. As always, I am one with the Force, and the Force is with me. No? Okay, fine, I'm Zach.
I'm your... The son of the guy who built the Death Star, Zach.
You know, I'm just Steven. I'm not even going to try this week.
One of these days.
You didn't even give yourself a name.
No, I just thought that line was amazing. I just love Chirrut. He was my favorite part of the entire movie.
In case you guys can't tell, we saw Rogue One.
Yeah, leading up to... While Zach was still playing with the audio. While Zach was still figuring out the new audio setup, Steve and I were just going back and forth about Rogue One and how awesome it was.
Even though we're not even doing a discussion this week.
No, yeah. That's for later.
Yeah, in either 1 or 2 weeks, we're going to have a full-on spoiler discussion of Rogue One with our good friend Rachel, who is just a giant Star Wars fan.
Next week, we're going to have a Westworld discussion.
Yeah, with girlfriend,
it's
Kayla.
It's just going to be a giant gush fest for the next 2 weeks.
Yes.
Should we do it?
I feel like we should do a year-end show. Like a wrap-up show.
The best 2016.
Best and worst.
Let's be real.
There's been some shit stuff
just
this
all
year.
The intros that Zach fucked us over
just
with.
It's just a clip montage. That's the 50-second episode.
It's the roll credits scene.
Alrighty. What's really awesome about Rogue One this weekend was that... the people that run the Star Wars Twitter is like, if you enjoyed Rogue One, you should check out Star Wars Rebels. And they released a poster of the next episode coming out in January. And it's Saw Gerrera. Underneath it says, save the rebellion, save the dream. And you see Sabine with her jetpack and stormtroopers with jetpacks. And the synopsis of this episode is that they're going to Geonosis for something. And, so one of the things that I read in the Star Wars Rogue One visual novel or visual guide that I bought immediately after I saw the movie was that Saw's breath mask in the film was because he got poisoned by the insecticide on Geonosis.
Huh.
So it's so awesome that they're tying all these things together. Maybe that'll happen in this episode because they only showed a torso up picture of him. So I'm really excited. It's going to be so cool. I love Rebels.
When I actually get to that episode, I'll be excited because I haven't watched it since like episode 3.
You have a lot of good time then.
Yeah,
because there's another Darth Maul episode that was the mid-season finale.
Darth Maul. Does he get his spider legs back?
We don't know.
Supider Maul.
And speaking of which, if you guys are high on the Rogue One hype, like I said, I bought the visual guide. And I'm just flipping through it right now, looking at these small, cool details. And then there is a prequel novel called Catalyst, A Rogue One Story, which is about Galen Erso, his wife, and Saw during their Imperial days as officers. So it's, and then Krennic is there too. So all of these characters that we learned about in the movie get even more backstory to them, which is really cool.
Shout out to Mads Mikkelsen, Rogue One. Man. Did not realize that was him.
Yeah, he played a good guy. What the fuck is with that?
Ain't about that life. Yeah, but it was fantastic. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, go see it. Just do it. Just absolutely do it.
My favorite thing is like during the interviews, someone was interviewing Donnie Yen, who said he invented like a new style for his character, Chirrut, in Rogue One, the blind Jedi monk, who's not actually a Jedi. He's just a believer in the Force.
He wants to be a Jedi really bad.
But he's like, yeah, I invented a new style. And the interviewer is like, well, was it hard? Did you get cuts and bruises? Like, oh, no, it wasn't hard. Nothing's hard for me. And I'm like, oh, Donnie Yen. That just gets me hyped up because he said he did this movie for his children. It's like, who says no to Star Wars? Plus, I can show this movie to my kids. And then I think the next movie he's going to be in is like Fate of the Fast or...
Oh, yeah, the Fate of the Furious.
Fate of the Furious. Is it like Fate with like an 8?
No, sadly.
They blew it. They had perfect opportunity.
But dude, one job.
Donnie Yen and Tony Jaa fighting each other. That is like the only reason you should go see that movie in theaters. Plus, Fast and the Furious is stupid and awesome.
God, I hope we get another wrench fight between Vin Diesel and Jason Statham.
Jason Statham's going to be in the movie, too.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
He's going to team up with The Rock and that crew to stop Dominic Toretto.
So is this like the theme of Fast and the Furious, just the bad guy from the last movie becomes a good guy?
Well, he's an anti-hero, I would say.
Have you heard how they write those movies?
Here's cars and explosions. Go.
So it's not a single writer. They take about 10 different people. And some people are only assigned to write stories. Some people are only assigned to write, like, fight scenes or driving scenes. And then in an interview I was reading with Max Landis, he said, now, I'm not saying there's going to be space, but they're trying to figure it out right now.
Probably going to be space.
And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, that's like the ultimate I have given up on Fast and Furious, if there are them scenes of them going out into space.
And, you know, I know it's the eighth movie and all, but I'm actually kind of excited for it.
Fast and the Furious is the Call of Duty of movies.
The Fast and the Furious
we gotta go bigger
has become my guilty pleasure. They keep releasing them, and I'm like, I don't want to see it, but I want to see it.
It's
just to see what they do.
It's the Rock effect.
And, you know, they gave the Rock a minigun, and they had Vin Diesel and Jason Statham wrench fight on a parking garage.
Vin Diesel,
it was worth it.
The Rock's pretty versatile. Like, he plays the happy-go-lucky god in Moana that's singing. And then, yeah, then he has a fucking
that, and then he stars in three movies with Kevin Hart this year. Yeah. And it's like, Kevin Hart, let me take a break. And he's like, no, we got to film Jumanji.
Hey, Central Intelligence was good.
It was. I love that movie.
I went in with mediocre expectations, and it exceeded them.
Yeah. But so
we're going to... They need to top the most Rocky moment ever of The Rock having a cast on, and then when shit gets real, he just breaks it with his pure muscles. They have to top that moment.
All right, so moving on. A lot of DC news this week. Not too much going on with Marvel, but one of the biggest leading things right now is that Wonder Woman has been removed as the UN ambassador.
I believe 45,000 people signed a petition and gave it to one of the leads of the UN to revoke her status as a UN ambassador.
So why is this such a big issue for them? There's like actual world problems going on right now.
It's because they are still under the notion that she is a bad body influence for people.
She's
that
just
her,
a big
her, her current, yeah, her current design is, you know, she's got the cleavage, she's got...
Did Frank Cho send you the art or something?
The super short shorts and... They're just thinking it'll give the wrong body image to girls, which is, again, you're just looking at the physical instead of...
So what about Pooh Bear and Tinkerbell, who are also honorary roles at the UN?
Yeah, Tinkerbell. Like, what the fuck?
So I actually have something about Tinkerbell. Nicola Scott, who is the current, or one of the current writers on Wonder Woman, wrote an op-ed for The Guardian, and she said, absolutely, real-life women should hold official representation roles, especially for such a loaded global goal, but an honorary ambassador, unlike a goodwill ambassador, is traditionally created for fictional characters. Winnie the Pooh was an honorary ambassador for friendship in 1998. Tinkerbell was named honorary ambassador of green environmental awareness in 2009. Fictional characters have the ability to cross borders and boundaries that real people can't. Their accessibility and interest to children help spread important goals to younger generations. And alongside with that, Nicole Scott goes on talking about the history of Wonder Woman's costume, her place alongside Rosie the Riveter. And then she goes on to say, you know, William Moulton Marston, the person who created Wonder Woman, was a women's rights activist. So, going on, she says, during the second wave of feminism 1970s, Gloria Steinem personally chose Wonder Woman as the perfect role model to grace the cover of the first issue of Miss Magazine. She remembered the impact that Wonder Woman had on her as a child and knew her message was still potent. It was not long after the cover that Wonder Woman became the first female lead action-adventure series, starring Linda Carter. 2017 will see Wonder Woman on the big screen in her first female-led movie of the modern superhero era, starring Israeli actress Gal Gadot. Unfortunately, it seems that all Wonder Woman's history, her place in cultural progress, has been ignored. The recent petition reduced her to a pretty lady in bathing suit, stripped of her agency. Just another woman who's lost her job. So it seems, you know, Nicola Scott, who, you know, she even at one point she was considered to be a live action Wonder Woman. And it's kind of cool now that she's the artist behind Wonder Woman. You know, she's putting a lot of faith, a lot of power into her Wonder Woman that a lot of people are backed up behind. You know, myself personally, I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't Wonder Woman be an honorary ambassador?
Mm-hmm. I think it was the way everyone phrased it. They're like, they're making her an actual UN ambassador.
Yeah, but
I forgot there were the honorary ones.
Yeah, and it was more people were just belittling her down to a pinup girl instead of this symbol of women power.
She is a feminist icon.
Yeah.
And let's look at in the comics, you know, the fictional story of Wonder Woman is that she works at the UN as an ambassador for Themyscira. It makes plenty of sense for this character to have this fictional honorary role, but a lot of people, modern day culture, can't see past this. And, you know, that makes it really hard for a lot of the nerdy type people who are like, yeah, you know, she deserves this because the character of Diana is the healer, not this savage Amazon. She's one who comes in and mends the broken relationships between the world. And the Wonder Woman 75th anniversary definitely showed that, you know, it showed the strong intellectual person, but pinup girl. Just get J. Scott Campbell to draw her now, I suppose, right?
Yeah, it's
put Frank Cho on the book like he wants.
That's the frustrating thing is reading the article that I actually posted in the CCBE was they had a quote from the person who started the petition, either the petition or the UN guy who got it put through, was that they talked about her message very briefly. They said, we understand what she stands for, but it's the way she looks that we can't get past. It's like, that's...
I think that says more about you than the character.
That's more close-minded than anyone else looking at it. Like, no one is looking at her as an honorary UN ambassador. Like, oh yeah, they got someone sexy to be an honorary US ambassador. It's, wow, look at that great message she puts up. But then you have the group of 45,000 or whatever people who are like, she's just a sex object. Like, because you're looking at her that way.
You're the ones making
it
that way.
If she was, let's say,
isn't
Wonder Woman happened to be Wonder Man for some reason and had a different agenda, people would protest the message, like not the looks. Let's say they put He-Man as an honorary ambassador.
Dick Grayson.
If He-Man was an honorary ambassador for, say, men's rights, people would care about the message, not the way he looks. It's the whole Barbie versus G.I. Joe He-Man argument.
As a frequent viewer of Parks and Rec, I can't even say the full name anymore.
Parks and Recreation.
Because I just never refer to it as
that. Yeah, no, it's Parks and Rec.
Yeah,
as a firm believer and frequent viewer of Parks and Rec, those freaking men activists, if you listen to them, they do not have a clear message. They're like, the women are taking the control from the men. Look, Leslie Knope made her husband cook. That's not his place. Yeah, it's such
it's even stated in the episode. It's like, these people are stupid. They don't look at things. They just make snap judgments, and that's what they're doing with this Wonder Woman thing.
It's so terrible. And it's like, again, if you said if He-Man were the honorary ambassador, someone's going to go, he's sending unhealthy body expectations towards the males. And I'm like, dude, I go to the gym every single day just for fun because I enjoy the gym. But I don't expect to look like He-Man.
Like, sadly, men wouldn't have that issue with He-Man. They'd see He-Man and be like, all right, he's He-Man. Not, he's putting unreal expectations on me. He's a cartoon.
Well, Pooh Bear put unreal expectations on the fact that I'm not a bear. That's racist.
And I don't like honey.
You're not a snuggly little...
You do like honey, but...
I'm not snuggly. Fluff. I'm pretty sure that's just like meat and blood and stuff. Also, I don't fart out glitter, so I can't be Tinkerbell either. Unrealistic expectations, man. We have someone who looks like Wonder Woman. Two people even. Linda Carter and Gal Gadot.
And that's what someone kind of brought up in the post I put on CCB is if they made it an actual person, people wouldn't have as much of an issue
with
it.
Wasn't Linda Carter an honorary member?
Linda Carter and Gal Gadot were both there. But they weren't...
Yeah, high five for unison.
Yeah, they weren't named honorary members. If I could see it going over better if, you know, Linda Carter was named the honorary ambassador for her embodiment of Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
That she embodies the message and the tone that Wonder Woman puts out.
It reminds me of that scene in Justice League War
Oh yeah.
Of the guy like petitioning, she's just a bimbo, and then someone Wonder Woman wraps him.
Yeah, it's like what do you really think?
I like to dress up in her outfit. It makes me feel powerful. And she's like, "Well, me too." Yeah. God,
it's like, great and scene. That is who should be a UN honorary ambassador, is someone who doesn't care if you dress up as Wonder Woman and feel powerful because she does too.
I need a warm Wonder Woman tank top after this episode.
Yes.
So moving on, Patrick Wilson is cast as Orm, a.k.a. the Ocean Master for the Aquaman movie.
Ocean Master!
So whether or not this means that we're going to see Ocean Master as the villain or not is up for debate.
Well, he's not always a villain. He's always been...
He's always against Arthur's son.
He starts as
Orm, brother of Arthur, and then kind of goes off the deep end.
Yeah, when he gets denied his true right. But I think, if anything, he'll be just Orm.
For a movie.
Yeah, and then, you know, he'll secretly be working behind the scenes, maybe. And then, you know...
Which is classic Ocean Master stuff.
Mid-credit scene or post-credit scene, show him donning the outfit or looking at the outfit or something.
I just think that for this first movie, they should do some... Like, everyone's like, okay, Aquaman villains are...
Black Manta?
Exactly. People think it's Black Manta, but we don't have official word. But it's like... Okay, the main Aquaman villains are Black Manta and Orm. And it's like, it has to be one of those two for the movie villain. I'm like, or they can make a whole new IP. I mean, whatever.
I mean, there's been some great recent storylines they could go with.
I would really like
Aquaman, Dark Maelstrom. Wait, that is the Dark
Maelstrom. That is Maelstrom, yeah. Aquaman.
Deluge that they're doing right now.
God, I would cry.
God, that'd be so good. I would like
Shaggy Man.
God, the Shaggy Man. I would like if they... did like Throne of Atlantis, if they're going for quasi origin story on this one,
right?
That would be a better
second movie. Black Manta.
I think it would be a better second Aquaman movie, just because we'll have the Justice League set up by then, and there's such a big role in Throne of Atlantis that it would work. I think even though the center is always Arthur in Throne of Atlantis, but Justice League plays a role.
The animated Throne of Atlantis is far different from the Geoff Johnsian Throne of Atlantis. So if they play it in a certain way, they can do a solo Aquaman Throne of Atlantis movie. But it would be really hard because, like you said, no matter what, some characters from the Justice League are there to help put pieces of the puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, who knows? I really wish and I really hope they do save him as a villain. Well, it's like my argument with Spider-Man or Amazing Spider-Man 2. Let Harry just be Harry for a whole film, so that way we can kind of like him. Exactly. I love Dane DeHaan. He's such a cool actor, but he's thrown into this, you're really cool for a moment, and then you go fucking crazy later in the movie.
Yeah, they're like, look, your friend Harry, and then they shoehorn in the Goblin because it's a Spider-Man movie, you need Goblin because you're going to kill Gwen Stacy. Which, again, save that for the third movie. You don't need to just throw it right at the second one.
Just don't kill Gwen. There's a new Spider-Man animated series. Sorry, totally not off topic from like Aquaman. But I mean, what episode of ZT would this be? But there's a new Spider-Man series coming out in 2017 that's going to star Peter, Miles, and Gwen as spiders.
Wait, isn't that the Spider-Verse show they're doing or something?
Well, no, they
Spider-Verse
had...
Spider-Verse arc ended.
Yeah, they had the Ultimate Spider-Man with the Spider-Verse arc. Actually, multiple Spider-Verse arcs. But they wrapped that up.
Okay.
Because that was... The first Spider-Verse arc had Donald Glover actually as Miles. The second one, they couldn't get him back.
Oh.
Guess he's too busy with Spider-Man already.
Actual Spider-Man.
Hobby Brown. So...
At the end of the movie, she's going to be like, my real name is Miles Morales.
So they're
Surprise!
Okay, Marvel Comics popular web-slinger returns to his teenage years and his earliest days as a superhero in Marvel's Spider-Man, premiering next year on Disney XD.
So is Ultimate Spider-Man ending?
Possibly.
I actually enjoy that one.
Yeah.
I don't
still
get why...
Greatest spectacular.
I don't get why they're being like, he's going back to his teenagers. He's still a teenager in Ultimate.
Have you ever gotten past, like, 18 in the animated shows?
In the one that Neil Patrick Harris starred in.
Two-part graduation day season finale will feature Spider-Man taking on arch enemy Doc Ock and Superior Sinister Six to save New York City. I don't know. Like, it's interesting because even then, there's supposed to be like an animated Spider-Man movie in 2018, but a lot of people are thinking they're axing that now in favor of doing Spider-Man Homecoming 2 or whatever they're going to call it.
Spider-Man Prom Night.
They're just 6 months apart.
Spider-Man Sadie Hawkins Dance. I don't know, man.
Spider-Man Winter Cotillion. Spider-Man Spring Formal.
Dude, let me tell you, the spring formal at my school was like zombie apocalypse. It was so...
Did you have the classic school? Gym divided?
I didn't go. I was actually like deathly ill that day. And my vice principal just told me to go home. She's like, you look and sound like crap. Go home tonight. And I'm like, okay, thank you. And I don't know. I think I missed a lot about the middle school awkwardness of kids all standing on one side of the gym and then like the teacher in the middle doing the worm or something.
See, that wasn't my middle school, sadly. Ours was just essentially like a passing period, but with the lights turned a little lower. Ooh. With music playing.
If that
playing.
Was a thing in mine, I never went to it.
Like, it was music playing and then everyone was just in a big group all talking to their friends. Like, this isn't a dance. This is just kids hanging out.
Yeah.
I don't even remember if my school had one.
We had a photo booth.
I did not care.
I remember I snuck into one.
Ooh, Rebel Steve.
Yeah, I was a fucking rebel. Because the dance was going on the same time we were getting our basketball jerseys, and the gym was divided by like this curtain thing. You just got the jersey and just whooped around.
So what we're learning is Steve was like a hardcore jock in middle school and a rebel.
Yeah, that was me.
I was middle school basketball jock. I just played World of Warcraft all day.
I was forced to play basketball.
I was a band nerd.
My parents were like, you're going to play a sport after school. Soccer's done. Go play basketball. It's like, okay, fine.
Yeah. So moving on to talk about more of the DCEU.
You mean you don't want to hear more about my tragic backstory?
Yeah, you don't want to learn about our backstories?
Former WB president of creative development confirms that The Batman is coming out in 2018, which is possibly going to be taking the spot of The Flash since Fumishia left. Or Fukushima, yeah, whatever his name is.
He said it was coming out. Because
in the quote that he gave, I can't remember which magazine it was, he said, you know, 2018 is going to be a very busy year for us. And he listed off some titles with Batman at the very end, mm-hmm. but no word on The Flash.
Yeah.
So right now they have it set for sometime in 2018, potentially, you know, end of year 2018. But nothing on The Flash yet, probably since they lost their
director.
Yeah,
so it's interesting. I mean, The Flash can be one of the most grounded movies, you know, but at the same time it's like, do we really need a Flash movie or things along that? It seems like a lot of people are having a hard time coming together because this is the second director for the Flash movie that left already, because there's like Seth something or another and then Fukushima. I can't remember his name. There's never an episode where I get someone's name right anyways. So, and then Ben Affleck even came out and said, after like the whole controversy of the Batman script is terrible, he says there's not enough money in the world to make a mediocre version of Batman worth it. So it's pretty intense. And if you look at his like track record right now, he's only starring in like one or two movies every year. The rest of that time is him just like grinding away at this Batman script. Mm-hmm. Probably like IMing Geoff Johns with emojis at the end, you know?
Well, and even if he's slated for movies for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Half those movies are already done.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
They're in post work right now. And so he's working on one, maybe two movies. And then when those are gone into post, he's probably going to be just dedicated to Batman.
Oh, yeah. Batman. For sure. Other things that came out recently this week was that David Ayer and Margot Robbie officially announced that Gotham City Sirens is coming out with Margot Robbie starring.
Or it's in production.
Maybe Megan Fox's Poison Ivy.
There's been a lot of weird casting rumors. I have like a really big nerd base at my middle school and they like talking to me about stuff, and one of the girls that is part of like that nerd group, she's a big Harley fan, and I told her, I'm like, did you hear there's a Gotham City Sirens movie coming out? And then it just clicked. She's like, oh, you mean Catwoman and Poison Ivy and Harley? And I'm like, oh cool, I thought I would have to explain that.
Breathe, nerd, breathe.
And she's like, oh my goodness, does that mean like the Birds of Prey are going to be the villains? I'm like, Or maybe Batman, you know, Jaws, Batman.
But they already said that they wanted to do Birds of Prey.
I know, and it's like, not only then are they going to have to cast a Poison Ivy and Catwoman that everyone's going to like, they're going to have to cast a Barbara Gordon, a Dinah Lance, and a freaking
Helena
Bertinelli. Or,
well, I mean, they might already have one a Dinah. Chick
from the Blackhawks.
Oh, the pilot. Lady Blackhawk.
Yeah, Lady Blackhawk. Zinda?
Yeah,
Zinda Blake, I think her name is.
But they potentially already have their Dinah.
That's true.
They have someone campaigning for it.
The lady from the Vikings.
Yep. She could be like, all right, you're my Black Canary.
Yeah, that is Lady Blackhawk.
It would make me so happy to see a Black Canary on the big screen.
Yeah, Zinda Blake, you got it.
Yeah, and like I said, if they open up that universe again, there's so much more, because if they have a Batgirl, that means there's going to be a Robin at some point. If they have a Black Canary, there's a Green Arrow. If there's a Huntress, that means maybe we'll see a Question out there someday. You know, just all these characters and their relationships coming together. And let me tell you, if they had a Question movie, like The Question, that'd be the most fucking amazing thing ever, because it's just that sheer detective story. There's so many
side characters they can throw into, like, leading to other movies. Like, you could have a Question.
They can show his office in the movie, like his little detective.
If they show
PI
Renee
agency.
Montoya anywhere in any of these movies, I'm just like, all right, where the fuck is KK now?
Yeah.
Bring it in. Do it. Or even a Maggie. If there's a fucking Maggie in there.
But Maggie's a Superman character.
I know.
Who got traded over to Gotham for a while.
But we can get all of these characters together.
That's true. And that's the most exciting part of it all.
Yeah. If anything from Sirens, we can build the DC Cinematic Universe even more.
Or even if it's like the original Gotham City Sirens storyline of Harley breaking free from the Joker. Like, that's the thing. And then someone even, I don't know if it was a real article or not, one of our friends in CCBE posted an article saying, like, there most definitely will be a romance between Poison Ivy and Harley, because you cannot have the story of Gotham City Sirens without Poison Ivy trying to campaign Harley away from the Joker. So it's awesome. If they go really true to that Paul Dini story, I'd be really excited to see it come to live action. Yeah. And again, it's that joke, or not the joke, but the thing that we talked about last week. It's like, is there going to be at any point a superhero franchise just done? And it's like, nope, it's never going to stop.
No, because you can... That's the great part about comics and superhero franchises. You can always make another story.
And Kevin...
You can find another thing to adapt. There's Kevin always something out there.
Kevin Feige even said at one point, it's, we don't need the X-Men in our Marvel universe. We can tell 4,000 other stories without having them. I'm like, that's a bit of a dickish move, but yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, you're right.
Even if comics were to stop being printed today.
Which they won't.
Which they won't. But... If theoretically, if all comics on the planet were to just stop, there are so many stories out there just sitting in vaults that you could pull to make another movie or another franchise even.
Let's bring the Valiant comics to life.
That just makes the superhero genre almost immortal as long as people want to see them.
Yeah, that's kind of like how Ben Affleck's studio picked up Descender after the first issue came out. And I'm like... You don't even know what the story is. And then reading Descender now, 20 issues later, I'm like, when's the movie coming out?
You know the story now. Give it.
Oh my God, if they make a Descender movie, though, I would, like, fangirl. Right. It'd be so expensive, though.
The thing I would like to see, I would like to see more, like, Rogue One type of comic book
story. We're saving that.
I'm not talking about Rogue One. I'm just talking about...
We're talking about that for Steve's discussion point.
I know where you're going, so save it. Okay. Hold it, bottle it up.
All right. I have a bottle. Cork. You have a bottle right there. All right. And then continue on our leading news. The top story on Reddit the other day was DuckTales reboot cast sings theme song. And it's really cool to see the new cast, and I'm like, is that Ben Schwartz? Is that Amir? Is that David Tennant? What?
But yeah, after seeing that video, I have a little more faith in the reboot. Because I thought, oh, they're just going to take something from the old days, try and redo it. It's going to be terrible. But they got Jean Ralphio.
Ben Schwartz.
Abed.
Amir.
and fucking the Doctor. Hamlet.
Oh.
And the Gooch.
And the Man in Purple.
The they got the Gooch.
This cast is like super A-list. I'm like, give me a new DuckTales. Give me a new Darkwing Duck show.
Darkwing Duck.
Because the new comic from IDW is just like super solid too.
When there's trouble, you call DW.
You good?
Darkwing Duck.
Okay.
There it is.
So it's really cool seeing all these old things come back, which leads me to our next point.
Everything old is new again.
The new section of our story. Zach rants at Superman for 5 minutes or less.
Everyone get comfy. Maybe some PJs.
Get that timer going.
Cup of coffee.
All right.
Get ready.
So the samples for the new Superman Reborn arc have been solicited for March. All the covers connect in a vertical line, which is really cool because really they're not side by side. Yeah. And we see that there is a red Superman and a blue Superman. Red Superman being the new 52 Superman, the blue Superman being the current / pre-Flashpoint Superman. Now, here's the fun part. Dr. Manhattan, while he's rebooting the universe, decides Superman is too powerful, and he splits the two. Very similar to how Red and Superman Blue were born, that their powers are splitting, even though they are both.
Superwoman thing they did.
I'm going to get there. So Superman splits, and the reason we see Superman lose his powers in the DCU period and the final days of Superman period with Peter Tomasi and Jeff Lewin Yang was because he was weakening due to being separated from the completed Superman. And that's why when Red Superman died, Lana received the electromagnetic powers that is Red Superman way back from, you know, the extreme days of comics. So we see Red Superman and possibly a cloned Lois were brought in since the events of Convergence displaced the original as Manhattan's rebuilding the universe. And then along with that is the fact that this Superman dies, his power spreads to Lois and Lana, but Lois dies in a very similar way to Clark because she does not have the Kryptonian genes. And, you know, Lana is even in that process of dying every time she used her powers. Allah, you know, Lady Thor. So we learn about Mr. Oz. So we are going to learn about Mr. Oz and the non-powered Clark Kent, who are many are speculating to be Superboy Prime, because the third cover of the series shows that normal Clark Kent with a bloody S on his chest, which is a homage to the end of Infinite Crisis. And then the big prevailing theory is that Red will somehow come back and he and Blue will fight Superboy Prime as a callback to Infinite Crisis. How did I do? 5 minutes or less?
That was like two.
Oh, wait, you're already done? Shit.
Oh. That's why I said 5 minutes or less.
I was looking at fantasy football.
So like I said, more Mr. Oz. We finally learned the Clark Kent mystery. It's going to be fucking awesome.
But why does Mr. Oz still need Tim Drake in Doomsday?
He's building an army. That's the biggest prevailing theory, is he is building an army to fight Manhattan.
That was kind of my thought too, is he's bringing all of these essentially greats from different points in case Manhattan
it's tries like, to put okay, something these in characters motion. Are already dead.
Yeah. That,
he's like, not going to notice if they're already gone.
Dead, and you have Tim Drake, who is a master hacker, good at a lot of, you know, anything technological, and you have Doomsday, the man, the thing that dies and then comes back immune to being killed that way again.
So why not, when Tim's sucked away, why does Mr. Oz just not say, I need your help in a greater scheme or a greater plan?
Because Tim is starting to remember things from before the Flashpoint. That's the biggest thing, is that he's starting to remember, and Mr. Oz cannot allow him to remember. It's either the fact that Mr. Oz is building an army to fight Manhattan, or Mr. Oz and Manhattan are together, and they're building an army to fight the DC heroes. And the fact that
the
Tim
ones that are figuring this out.
Yeah, like, so Wally, Batman, Superman,
and they can turn those memories around and be like, we don't want them to remember. You need to help
us. No.
Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see what actually happens. All right, and then the last thing that we have for news this week, we, you know, cutting it really short because we also have Comic Book Club, and then something called the Broncos are playing today. There's an episode of football this week called Broncos versus Patriots. Yes. So it's going to be a really big deal to some people, and it kind of sounds like a disappointment. You know,
it could very well be.
We'll not see. With that attitude.
It sounds like a Manchester United, in my opinion, where, you know, they hope score the
best,
a goal.
Hope
and
for
then,
the best, expect the worst.
Well, no, Manchester United is that they score a goal and play keep away with the other team for the rest of the game, which is what they did. So freaking,
that's just mean.
Yeah, they did that to WBA it's yesterday. It's fucking dumb hate Manchester.
Sports.
Hey, we never, Zach never talks
about
sports.
I never talk about sports. I only talk about soccer, so give me a break.
Do you want me to talk about the Overwatch MLG tournament that's been going on that I've been watching all weekend?
Hey, man, I'm missing a Tottenham game right now. So,
and I'm going to miss the finals, probably, of the
last Overwatch thing to tournament. Talk about is that 11 Little Roosters, a series by Rooster Teeth, the spiritual successor of 10 Little Roosters.
I want to say spiritual and then quasi sequel.
Yeah,
they said it's the spiritual sequel.
Yeah, because Ryan is still Ryan,
and Gavin is Gavin the third, so he's probably the third clone of Gavin.
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that.
So,
and starting Tuesday or Wednesday is the Funhouse Sex von Struckle Boys.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's a really cool like Who Did It murder thing. It's based off of the 10 Little Indians story.
Yeah,
who I can't remember. I think,
but it's an interactive murder mystery.
Yeah, and pretty much this time around, 11 different spies.
Yeah, spy agencies
are being gathered.
23 different people.
Yeah, and they're pretty much just going to be killing each other the whole time.
Some of which involve the Canadian Assassins League,
Agatha Christie, and Then There Were None is what it was called. Mm. And I'm not going to say the original title because it's really racist. Like, really bad.
Well, what am I looking at?
That paragraph.
Okay.
Which paragraph?
Yeah, yeah.
Where my thumb is.
Yeah, no, we're not going to say the actual
a
title.
A cool little interactive murder mystery.
Oh.
So it's fun, and the audience gets to interact with it. It's like, who did it? What item did they do it? And you can predict the future deaths. It's like, who is going to die next episode, and how are they going to die?
They have like a competition for
there
the
are contest prizes.
Yeah. Is this like
so
if you
in
get the one who predicts the most?
The first one, the 10 Little Roosters, they gave you a poem at the beginning of the first episode or at the end of the first episode, and you kind of use that to guess who was going to die next and figure out who was the killer.
Which is what happened in the actual story by Agatha Christie.
But in this one, they've even stated that every single episode, they're going to essentially tell you who killed who done it, but you have to find and decipher every single clue that they put in there, and the clues could be anything.
And yeah, the first time around they did a lot of references to a lot of their content. So like at one point they had like a scorpion kills
Bernie.
One of the people, yeah. And in one of the shows, the guy who gets killed by the scorpion, wasted character who got killed by the scorpion tank in Halo.
Which was in the poem referred to as
art
life
imitated
life. Or
art imitates life. Mm. So, yeah.
It's going to be really
cool.
It's going to be stupid insane, especially with the latest group of people they cast.
Yeah, and what they're doing is there's going to be the initial release, or the actual 11 Little Roosters, but before that, they're doing a special kind of intro video, I would say, with one of the groups of assassins that's like a 360 experience.
So get your Google Cardboard ready, boys and girls.
Or just click the arrows on the YouTube video.
Or get your Google Cardboard ready. Or hold your phone at arm's length and spin around in your living room.
Yeah, just get in a chair and spin around. And
yes.
Oh, yeah. Rotating chair. Good idea, Steve.
Also, speaking of Rusia, have you guys watched Meme Machine yet?
I have not.
I started it this
morning. I highly recommend it. I watched it this morning.
Let's talk about it next week.
For the listeners, go get a first membership. Watch it. Be part of the discussion.
You can go to roosterteeth.com/first and get a free 30-day trial.
We're not sponsored. Well, we'd love to be.
But you should do it because there's a lot of great content, a lot of great shows. Go watch. You can be part of our documentary discussion next week.
Yeah.
On top of our Westworld discussion next week.
On top of our other discussions next week.
So many discussions.
Where we discuss things. All right. We're going to pause really quick. I need to ask Zach something before we get to picks of the week. Dun, dun, dun.
With the mics off?
Well, no. I just need to borrow your cell phone charger so I can charge my iPod before I go to the gym.
Oh. Okay.
Sorry.
shut down.
Funny shit.
Learning things with Steve.
Da, 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 da.
So today we're going to talk about copyrights and trademarks.
And DMCA.
Because I did some research when thinking about doing YouTube videos. About what music you can and cannot use.
Are you back?
Yes, we are back.
Hey, audience. We are back. This week, recommendations are going to be a little bit different because I did not read anything because I was grading.
I did not read anything because I was busy with work.
I read stuff. Yay.
So, Zach, what did you read this week?
I read Hawkeye number one that came out. Hawkeye. Or if you look at the cover, it's number one of number one.
What?
Because it's
Kelly Thompson. Now. That's silly.
I blame Marvel for the number one, number one.
Marvel,
thing.
That's silly.
Because you know how they're doing the stupid Marvel Now number one. And then number one is also in the corner.
At least actually, DC does it tastefully. They put like the Rebirth brand on top. And then a little box
of
the number.
Which I'm kind of getting tired of seeing because it's not the greatest logo.
I like it.
It's kind of, I don't know. It feels like they just kind of came up with something and it's like, yay. Oh, wait. We should probably.
Just wait till we get a new logo and it's just going to be Z2 Rebirth. And you're going to have to stare at that for the next year.
I'm kind of getting tired. I kind of wish they would get rid of it at this point, but I don't think they're going to now.
I like it.
Not until everyone's had their. Like number threes, I'd say.
Oh man, that was a really good discussion on Hawkeye. Let's keep going, guys. So, Zach, what was it about Hawkeye that you loved?
So, it's kind of weird. Everyone, ever since the Matt Fraction run, everyone seems to be trying to mimic it. That's come after. Like Jeff Lemire took over the book, and
he did like watercolor in the flashbacks.
Yeah, he did watercolor in the flashbacks. The artist, but the artist always stuck with the minimalist for the modern sections of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing again for this. I don't know. It's kind of weird that everyone's trying to mimic Aja's style for Hawkeye specifically.
Take on me?
Yes.
So it's like the black and white scratchy pencil-y art?
No, not really.
That's a joke
it's...
on Take on Me, by the way.
Stupid jokes.
But no, it was a fun tale. It reminded me a ton of the third Matt Fraction arc, L.A. Woman.
Right.
Where it was just Kate in L.A. just helping people. And pretty much she's just trying to... It seems like the whole story is going to be her just trying to separate herself from Clint's Hawkeye. Cause
five people have called me to punch me in the face.
No, 12. It was 12 people called just to punch Clint in the face.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's kind of going to be what the story's about. It should
and
be
that's
fun.
Your Hawkeye book, too. Like, that's the one that you've been waiting for.
I've been wanting
most.
More Kate Bishop ever since I read the LA Woman arc, because before that, it was just all Quint, and Kate was just kind of there as a supporting character, and those two bickering. And then you got the LA Woman arc from Fraction, and that kind of showed, like, oh, no, Kate really is her own person, like, and she has her own things that she wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
So... It seems like that's definitely going to be like the main thing since Quint appears to be doing Occupy Avengers stuff.
Yeah, he's hanging out with a Red Wolf in the desert.
Don't even know who that is.
Da 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 B-list.
But yeah, it seems like it's going to be a fun book. I love Kate Bishop wherever I can get her.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the art is good. It's just kind of interesting of how everybody took Aja's minimalist style. It's like, let's just keep that style for all the other stories.
Right. Well, it's kind of like one of those things, if it works, don't fix it.
Right. I mean, Aja even had a variant cover for the book.
Yeah.
This is kind of interesting, too.
It does show that Marvel doesn't really have, like, an in-house style, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but you look at your DC books and you can really tell it's like, oh, yeah, everyone does the Jim Lee thing, unless you have one of those out-there books like Shade or Gotham by Midnight, which has, like, that really scratchy horror-esque art.
Right. And one other thing is I expect America Chavez to show up in this book at some point because, like, on the little flap of, like, it shows all the credits and stuff. It shows, like, because she's starting her own, pretty much the whole premise is Kay goes to L.A. to start her own PI business just to try and help people. And she, like, the first page when you open the book is her application for it. And it has, like, her three recommendations. It's, like, Clint. Shoot, who's the second one? I want to say it might be Carol. No, it's Jessica Jones. And then the third one is America Chavez. And it's labeled as bestie. So I'm just like, hashtag I need more America Chavez. Yeah.
They just need girlfriends.
It's a fun book. I'm looking forward to reading more of it.
Yeah. Steve, you want to go and pick something?
Yeah, even though I haven't read anything. I've been catching up on Westworld, so Westworld.
Yeah.
In 1 week's time, we're going to talk about Westworld.
Yes. Can't really say much because we have a discussion coming up, and I'm on episode 5 now.
Who do you think the man in black is? Don't answer that.
I've started into you watching Westworld. I have like a half page of notes just from episode 2 because I saw something like, I'm going to mark that down for our discussion. Ooh, more stuff. Ooh, more.
There was a there was an interesting question one of my coworkers posed when I was talking about it with him. So I'm going to save that. I think it'll be pretty good. Yeah. Which they actually kind of brought up in, I think, the last episode, which was kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and it's funny that you say that you pull me, because that's actually how I watch some TV shows, is that I sit down with like a notepad and just write interesting things that I hear or like remark on something. You know, when I read Rebirth for the first time, the 3 pages of notes, I mean, that was just me like reading and writing at the same time. Or for my pick, I watched Chronicle this week, a movie that came out in 2012, which I say is like one of my favorite movies ever. And I'm surprised I never forced Kayla to watch it. Because, like I said,
that's all the things she's made you watch.
And I've made her watch. I've made her watch, like, Inglourious Basterds.
Such a great movie, though.
But, like, Chronicle is one of my favorite movies, and what kind of made me fall in love with Max Landis's style. So, this was the first movie that Max Landis and Josh Trank came together for, and probably the last movie. As Max Landis likes to describe, he and Josh hated each other in high school. Like, they actually knew each other. He was like, Max graduated with honors. I got kicked out of high school. And then they met each other later on, and Josh Trank pitched a movie to Max. And it's like, what if you wrote this movie about two friends? They get superpowers. One dies. The other one becomes a superhero. And basically, Landis goes, what if there were 3 friends? And 3 friends. And then he wrote Chronicle in 3 days. Have you guys watched it?
Oh, yeah. I've seen bits of it.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I know the premise.
So he wrote the entire movie in 3 days and gave it to Josh Trank. Later sold it to Fox and said he will not sell the rights to the movie unless Josh Trank came and directed it. And the story of Chronicle, you know, the 3 friends coming together. And Landis says this is basically Carrie for boys in his mind, is that he wanted to make this movie be a spin, flip it on its head in traditional Max Landis fashion, where, you know, you have 2 potheads and one of them turns out to be like a Russian spy who got activated in American Ultra. So it's not a tale about people getting superheroes, but the focus is a friendship and that wolf pack mentality that you find in high school, and how hanging out with your friends is this wonderful thing and how fragile it is. Landis saw that Andrew hadn't turned evil, but he was just in such emotional pain by the end of the film, dealing with his mother's death, Steve's death, the pain meds going through him after he tried to rob the gas station, and, you know, his abusive father. And he's like, you know, Andrew didn't have to die. He was just so hyped up on the pain meds that he was disassociated with everything by the point of his death. So one of the cool things I found out recently is that the script for Chronicle 2 got leaked last year. It's Max Landis' script itself. And he told everyone to go read the film because he's not sure if Chronicle 2 Martyr will ever be made. And one of the cool things, you know, the first 16 pages of this transcript is this girl, Miranda, who's filming everything. And then her boyfriend's like, what are you, the next Andrew Demeter? And she's like, that's not funny. So, you know, the story spreads that Andrew Demeter was this person who had superpowers and everything. But the whole world is denying superpowers. So 9 months in, Miranda releases the what we know as Chronicle. You know, one of the big thing gaping holes at the end of the movie is like, who took all the video footage that Andrew made and made Chronicle? And that's the first plot point of the movie, is this girl who made the film we now know as Chronicle, and Chronicle being a movie in their universe. So it's really cool, really meta.
People love their meta.
Yeah. So it's really cool. I really enjoy it. And God, I just love it. I'm reading the script right now, so I'll note back later, because Martyr does involve a real supervillain coming in. And then the character Matt, you know, the only one to survive Chronicle, watches the documentary Chronicle. So it'll be so cool. I can't wait. Yeah.
So I forget, were they aliens? Was it aliens?
They don't know. Powers? It was a giant hole in the ground. They fell into the hole and got superpowers. And it's kind of Dragon Ball.
Pretty much Power Rangers.
Yeah. But which also Max Landis wrote a script for. And it's one big thing, too. It's like Dragon Ball Z mentality. They can make themselves invincible if they focus on something. And, you know, the reason why Matt was able to kill Andrea at the end of the movie was because Matt was, like, doing his, like, I am the Apex Predator. Like, yeah, all these cameras. And then the spear goes through him. Spoilers if you haven't seen a movie in 4 years.
Actually a fantastic scene.
It was so great. Like, you need to watch it.
Like, that shocked me watching the movie. I was like, how are they going to end this? It seems like, are they going to fight? Are they going to fight? Oh...
Yeah, people, and the entire movie is like filmed in South Africa, which I didn't realize. Really? Yeah.
Huh.
Because I always thought, you know, it takes place in Seattle. Yeah, it takes, the movie itself takes place in Seattle, but all the filming is in South Africa. Huh. So there's a really cool shot with the Space Needle. Alrighty, so I'm done talking about Chronicle. That brings us to our discussion point, which Steve brought this week.
Which is going to be a quick one because we have to do book club as well.
Ha, quick.
But... So, this little movie, you know, we talked about at the beginning, you know, Rogue One came out. Nothing too big, nothing too fancy.
What are we, some kind of Rogue One? Zach is messing with lighting.
I'm playing with the reflection of my green tea can.
And then, you know, a little bit ago, another tiny movie came out called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And both these movies, gigantic successes. Rogue One is breaking box office records all over the place.
It's my favorite Star Wars movie now.
Samesies. But we're going to talk about that in a couple weeks. But in the meantime, with side movies becoming a big thing, you know, side stories.
Anthology stories.
Yeah.
More or less.
A, why do you think they're becoming so popular? And what took them so long to become popular? To where they're this big thing? Because there have been side movies, but they've always been... direct-to-DVD sequels and that sort of thing.
Right. I think it's mostly because the franchises weren't big enough.
Well, even, you know, my point is that no one dared to think about them.
Yeah, it's like, all right, we got to have more sequels. We got to have this, continue this storyline that's really successful.
And then the sequel sucks.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the most proper anthology or spinoff is Marvel's approach, where they did Iron Man, and then at the end... Nick Fury goes up. It's like, I want to talk to you about the Avengers initiative. And everyone's like, what the fuck? What do you mean the Avengers? And then that set off like this whole thing because, you know, people, it's so hard to create this very successful franchise and say what you will about Star Wars or even Harry Potter, which had a few weekends in it. They were like, okay, that's a perfect book ended closure. We're not doing anything else. And then the prequels happened. And then Rogue One eventually happened. And then the seventh movie happened. And people are like, there is an audience for these things. Like, when
people
I went to
want
go,
more Star Wars.
When the movie we went to, I don't know if you heard this, but like a few rows in front of you, there was this family that took a picture before the start of the movie. And then he was like, I can't believe it. This is your first Star Wars movie in theaters. I remember when I saw Empire Strikes Back as a kid in theaters, I'm like, holy shit, there's an audience for that. And I don't think about it because I saw Phantom Menace in theaters.
Yeah, same. Like, I was talking to my dad about it, and he's like, he saw A New Hope when it came out. I think he said while it was in theaters, because back then movies stayed in theaters a lot longer because
like
they weren't being churned out.
There was
out
no DVD
as fast.
Or video release.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, all right, we got another movie coming out. We need to make room. What are we going to throw away? Mm-hmm. But I think he said he saw A New Hope in theaters about 65 times because he loved it that much.
Back then, tickets were a dollar for my movie. Now you can get popcorn for three.
And, you know, my dad and I were talking about it and about, you know, how there's always been a Star Wars movie for every generation. And, you know, we had the prequels.
We got shafted.
Okay.
I like the prequels, that's the thing, though. but we got shafted.
I enjoy the prequels not as good as the original trilogy.
There is a good story in there somewhere.
But when you were a kid, did you give two shits?
About which movie was the best. I wanted to go pod racing, and I wanted to be a clone trooper.
It was fucking lightsaber fights and pod racing.
I wanted to do backflips with a lightsaber.
And that's the thing, is they have, you know, episode 8 coming out soon. They had episode 7. But they, I guess they wanted to give the, another generation their Star Wars movie.
Which was 7.
Well, you know,
not necessarily. Because there were kids, even though it came out last year, there were still kids who were probably too young to see a full-fledged Star Wars movie.
Man, they got shafted, too, because it's like the dark movie. So these kids are going to be messed up.
And but then we're going to go back to episode 8 and just be like,
this is still really
dark. It's dark, but what was that stuff?
One of the things that I was talking about, and it's kind of like what's going on right now with Warner Brothers and AT&T, is like they want to do these things, but there's no proper funding or no one's reaching out to do these things. What made the Star Wars books so successful was because there were no movies for a span of 10, 20 years.
It's like, okay, you've created this universe. There has to be other things happening this whole time.
There wasn't anything on the scale of Star Wars at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were movies that were just contained little things.
Yeah.
But then you had Star Wars where they had this gigantic lore. They had this big mythos that they could work with, but at the time didn't have the resources or probably the audience to
People thought New Hope was going to tank.
That's why it was just called A New Hope. Or it was actually just called Star Wars to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, or Star Wars, A New Hope. It was just Star Wars, because they thought, this is it. It's not going to go anywhere. And then as it went down, 6 months later, they renamed it Episode 4, A New Hope.
Yeah. I don't think they added the episode until...
They did. Yeah.
Did they really?
Yeah, I had this discussion with someone at work of when did they actually call it Episode 4, and it was about 6 months after its theatrical...
Did he really know that he wanted to do stuff before that?
Well, it's like the whole thing. It's like, you know, you have these characters who are these mysterious forces. Like, I'm sure people wanted to know who the hell Ben Kenobi was. People wanted to know who Darth Vader is. And, you know, we get those small tidbits like of, no, I am like, your father.
It's like, oh, there's all that history there. What? How did those two...
Yeah, and Lucas had this whole story spelled out, but he took the chunk that he thought the audience would want to see, because you don't want to see this little kid, Anakin Skywalker, come up and then nothing happens, because if the movie tanks, you're not going to get another movie. So this little kid, you don't know what happens to him, you just know he's powerful. Meanwhile, you have A New Hope where
you have his child.
Yeah, you have all of this universe that if it were to tank, that's fine. It ends and it could be a self-contained movie, but it exploded.
I mean, when you put a whole galaxy onto your tagline, there's a lot to go on with that.
And I think right now it's especially important because it comes to the argument that like movie developers or studios are just bringing back old IPs because they can't think of anything new. There are people that write scripts every single day and release a script to a studio. Whether or not this script is going to be created into something like a lot along the lines of Max Landis, you know, his movies, he made a bunch of scripts, but Chronicle was the one that set him apart from everything else he ever wrote. And some of his, he wrote all these movies in the high of Chronicle. He wrote Victor Frankenstein as soon as Chronicle got released.
He wrote that?
Yeah,
the movie with
Daniel Radcliffe. That Victor Frankenstein. And it took 4 years for that movie to ever come out.
They have these scripts. People are like, oh, they're just bringing back this old idea because they need money. It's like, they probably have this script sitting in a pile that they're just kind of working through that. But I was like, we want to make this, but we have all of these bigger things to make first.
And at the same time, it's they are a business. Like, they're going to make what they think's going to be profitable.
Right. Dude, so many toys. I bought a pop as soon as I finished that movie.
But I mean,
still Seth Sullivan doesn't have a Forest Whitaker eye on it.
But yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, the toys are a big seller, but that's why a lot of those smaller movies, they get made by like the people in them, because they want to make them.
And I think one of the big things about these underlying spinoff stories is that, granted, Marvel, Disney, they own the property, so they can do whatever they want. But like, man, let me tell you, as cool as Kyle Katarn is, the original plans to steal the Death Star was so fucking convoluted. Like they were separated into different things, like 7 different files. So Kyle Katarn's story before he joined the Rebellion was he was a smuggler, stole Death Star plans. There is even a mission in Battlefront 2 where you play as a Bothan spy to steal Death Star plans. Mm-hmm. Granted, the line Mon Mothma says many Bothan spies died was for the second Death Star. But yeah, that explains a lot.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
But it's that whole reeling feeling of like, this is kind of convoluted. Let's make this better. Like Star Wars, the Clone Wars animated series. Originally, I didn't want to watch it because the animation was a little funky at the time. But
people weren't used to that 3D.
The canon-ness of this story made me appreciate Anakin Skywalker's story anymore. It's a better way to flesh out these characters we've known and seen forever. It's like, you know, watching the original trilogy, your father was the greatest duelist. He was a pro at the lightsaber. The
best pilot in the galaxy.
We didn't see jack shit. And then watching Clone Wars, I'm like, oh shit, Anakin really is great. Or even like, you know, Rogue One literally taking place hours before A New Hope does a beautiful job of connecting all of these different threads.
While still being in its own story. You know what's kind of weird now that I remember? You remember the first teaser we saw for Rogue One? It was just really dark, like the rebels are invading on this beach, like this freaking beachfront
shooting at the AT-ATs.
I'm just like, wait, that wasn't in the movie at all.
We still have, exactly, that. There's a scene in the original trailer, which is Jyn, Cassian in K2, who is like the closest representation of HK-42 from the original KOTOR series we're ever going to get, running on the beach with Jyn holding the Death Star plans, and that wasn't in the movie. Or a TIE fighter staring Jyn down on the bridge in one of the climaxes of the film. And it's like, there, of course, a bunch of things is going to get cut for story's sake to make it less.
I'm more referring convoluted to like the original teaser they showed when they're like, we're going to do anthology movies. It was this dark thunderstorm scene with rebel ships coming in onto this Imperial base.
Right.
Nothing close to that.
Yeah, Krennic isn't walking through the water with dead stormtroopers all around him at any point in the movie either. So it's kind of like,
maybe we'll get an extended feed.
An extended thing of him just taking a stroll along the beach while people get shot.
And then going back in.
Yeah, there's so much I want to talk about Rogue One, but I'm trying to stay away from it.
But, you know, even, I know we're sticking lots of Star Wars, but something like Harry Potter. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Cool. Awesome film. I really enjoy it.
Flesh out this wizarding world.
Yeah, it wasn't, at this point in time,
but
it wasn't a necessary story for the Harry Potter universe. It just added to it. It made the Harry Potter extended universe, essentially.
Yeah, it made it bigger. You know, it's the American Wizards. It's not the spinoff people wanted. Everyone wants the Marauders in Hogwarts story, but there's probably not enough. Like I said, The Rock, Chudley Cannon's Quidditch Through the Ages movie. Take my pitch, WB. But there's not enough there to do that Marauders movie, because they're not going to, of course, they're going to go through shenanigans, but it's not like those heavy action scenes of Harry Potter. Whereas Fantastic Beasts, they make this new IP named after a freaking encyclopedia. No, named after a history book in which Ron, Hermione, and Harry write in the margins of, in, you know, our real life version, but it fleshes out the American side of the thing, and they're like, ooh, we can make this a 5-film franchise leading up to this point. Same with Star Wars. I really do hope they continue with this anthology series. And the third one, you know, since Boba Fett got axed, I want a Darth Vader movie, which is him going from 3 through 4 or 3 through A New Hope, of him taking down Jedi.
So the comic. Oh, wait, no. The comic series takes place after 4. That's right.
Yeah.
There's so many different things they could make an anthology movie out of.
Yeah.
Like, they could make a Yoda movie.
I think.
I refuse to believe that after the events of 3, he just went right into isolation to Dagobah. There has to be something in between that.
Dagobah, I go.
And I want to know.
Peace out, Richards.
I wanted to know what happened before he went to Dagobah.
He was on Kashyyyk.
What was he doing on Kashyyyk?
He was with the Wookiees. Was fighting.
Right.
Because that was when the Wookiees were being taken by the Trinsdonian slavers. Or no, the Separatists were invading and the slavers were there too.
Yeah, they were turning the Wookiees into slaves.
Give me that story.
And then after the fucking war, the Wookiees became slaves again from the Empire.
Or give me what happened after Kashyyyk.
And that's a really sad story.
That brought me to the point that we were talking about in group chat. It's like Twilight Company, which is the story of the Battle of Hoth from the Rebel perspective. You know, Luke is dicking around. Han and Leia are doing their
fucking thing. Tauntauns.
Fucking Tauntauns. Fucking Tauntauns. But give me the story of the Twilight Company who are fighting this hopeless battle against the Imperials. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the last... You know, there's a scene with Vader in Rogue One that shows, holy shit, like, this is Vader.
These guys are fucked.
Like, you know, the original thing where I was joking around about Jaws Vader going through, ripping through everyone. That scene kind of happened. And like I said, I want a Vader movie where he's hunting Jedi after he learns Ahsoka Tano's alive.
I need to finish. There are others. I'm very close to finishing the book. I feel like if I know how it's going to end, I would love to see just somebody like some sort of group, like set of bounty hunters hunting down Jedi,
which is the bounty hunter video game. Or give me a Quinlan Vos movie. You know, we see him in Dark Disciples with Asajj Ventress, but it'd be really cool to see the Jedi that went rogue before all of this shit went down. You know, he is the Ahsoka before Ahsoka was cool thing happened, where I'm no Jedi, which he tells to Vader, and then they fight. But the Ahsoka book takes place literally the same thing with Rogue
right
One.
After Order 66.
Yeah, it takes place after Order 66, but it takes place literal hours before the second season of Rebels.
God.
So you need to watch season two of Rebels.
I need to watch all of Rebels.
So he actually brought me into the second part of the discussion topic.
Yeah.
What film franchises do you want side movies from?
I want an Ahsoka movie.
Darth Vader.
All right. Asterix here. No Star Wars.
Chronicle 2.
That's not a side movie, that's a sequel.
Give me a Batwoman movie. Like, after, I want to see what they do with Gotham City Sirens and the Batman. If they bring some of those characters in or even mention them, like, hell, I'll give like have Batman's like emails on the side, and there's just one from Kate Kane, like, yeah, like, just let me know that these characters exist.
And that's the thing. I think WB reportedly announced, since Suicide Squad did like well financially
did well.
Harley Quinn was always going to get a spinoff, but one thing that he announced is that there's going to be a possible Deadshot movie spinoff, which in and of itself would be interesting because people kind of like fell in love with this is some kind of Suicide Squad thing.
I love Will Smith as Deadshot. I think
he's a different Deadshot than any other Deadshot, right? You know,
and the thing is, he's doing his classic thing of Will Smith playing Will Smith
as Deadshot.
But Will Smith playing Will Smith as Deadshot worked. Mm-hmm. He made that character into himself.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, the easiest thing for these Marvel and DC movies to do is just keep throwing in new characters, and that's called a spinoff movie. But, you know, taking a big beloved franchise, I want to see, you know, as hard as it was to watch parts of The Hobbit, you know, the Silmarillion movie is eventually going to come out. So give me Bjorn and his wife. Because that story,
get a director that actually cares about making the movies.
Yeah,
this time.
You know, Peter Jackson was so burned by it.
He did not give a fuck about
or
this.
Give me crap. Let Guillermo del Toro take over, or give me something
like
with
supposed to happen.
This really big horror vibe to it, and have Guillermo del Toro do the Swamp Thing movie, which is a spinoff of Justice League Dark, or give me, you know, something.
I'll be curious to see how the next Pacific Rim movie does and what story they tell with
them. They go to space.
Gundams.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool to see if they like somehow, it's like, all right, we gotta go find, or they like, they somehow enter a portal and go,
yeah,
they create
the maelstrom is what it's called.
But that's supposed to be a prequel,
is it?
I think so.
Okay.
I think it is. I don't know if they've changed it.
It's actually on the Atlantic, so while they're dealing with shit every on the other side happens at the same time. Or freaking, you know, that brings me to Final Destination. You know, there's five movies. The sixth movie.
I didn't expect.
But the sixth movie is a prequel to the first movie. Like, it was just this really cool, bizarre spinoff. You know, you expect everyone's going to die, but it's done in such a really cool way that, you know, Final Destination movies were, like, my guilty pleasure, kind of like how the Fast movies were for Steve. Or, you know, it's so hard to do a spinoff movie because people love these big, beloved universes. Mm-hmm. They think they're perfect in the end and don't want anything else, but they crave that content.
I think people want certain stories told within that universe.
Totally.
Like, they each have their one thing that they're really attached to. It's like, I want to see this story told on the big screen. Or I want to see this character pop up.
Right. And I'm kind of with Zach with the Lord of the Rings series. While The Hobbit did kind of burn me with how they stretched it out into three movies, yeah, sure, they put a couple things from the Silmarillion in there. But I want a full-on, like, Beyond Hobbit prequel. I want, like, a Sauron movie, like the origin of Sauron, where they forge the rings and they give it to all the races and they show the descent of man into the ring wraiths and Sauron and all of that. Or another kind of out there movie that I never thought of until recently, a Pirates of the Caribbean side movie.
Oh, where, like, Johnny, not Johnny Depp,
Orlando Bloom.
No, yes, yeah, so Johnny Depp, where, we learn why Captain Jack Sparrow is a pirate, which is explained in, like, these children novels. And
no,
I'm
it's
like,
explained in the third movie.
No, we get his backstory as a character in these young adult books. Then are later explained, the Black Pearl was a slaver ship. And we see Jack Sparrow go against the British Empire.
Yeah, it's like, I want to see a Jack Sparrow origin story. Or what happened to Orlando Bloom after the third movie?
After he became Davy Jones.
Yeah, after he took over. Yeah, he gets to come back every
10 years?
Yeah, 10 years, something like that.
I have a child? What the fuck?
But what happens in between that time? It's not like he's just sitting at the bottom of the ocean like, 3 more years and I can go see my wife.
Kraken comes out again.
Or even a Davy Jones origin story. Like, they explained it briefly in the third one, but what led young Davy Jones to where he could fall in love with Calypso and then betray her to become cursed?
The Odyssey.
Yeah, I want to see that whole story.
And yeah, it's, I agree with you, and that makes me so sad that the Percy Jackson movies tank.
I enjoyed the first one, the second one,
because we can have so much more, because we have the Olympians, we can also do the Roman side of stories, we can also have the Egyptian, the Norse.
There's even, you know, they even made a side story of Percy Jackson books, the Lost Hero story.
Yeah, which is the Roman gods.
Yeah.
And then there's also Trials of Apollo, which is like another series. And it's like, there's so much you can do with this universe, but there's no audience for them.
Here's my thing with how, like, these anthology and side stories go, though. They always have to somehow tie back to the original story, it seems like.
Which is why
Lost Hero would have been, you know, arguing.
But that's
something
that it's like, there's plenty of stories that don't have to be told within that same narrative. Like, if you wanted to do more, say, I'm going to go back to Star Wars, but if you wanted to do more Star Wars, like some stuff like during the Clone Wars, you could do a Republic Commando movie. I think it would do really well. Like, now that we've seen the success of Rogue One being this kind of war story.
The only film without the Skywalkers and the only film with no Jedi.
Right. Like, there's, I think people need to start, if we want to see those stories, I think we have to start looking out, like, okay, there's plenty of other things happening in these universes. How can we tell those stories that don't have to tie directly back into that main continuity thing?
Which is what I was looking forward to with the Rogue One movie to begin with. But then they tied it back to the Skywalker dynasty.
Literally back in.
Yeah, by throwing in Darth Vader. They're like, and back to Skywalkers. It always comes back
to
Skywalkers.
Smallest degree. Yeah. But, smallest.
I mean, it all makes sense, but yeah, at the same time, it's like, it would have been cool if there was like, okay, so they got the plans and then they held on to them for a little while. It's like, oh shit, they found out that we have them. We got to get these out.
Yeah. And like I said, there's other things I would really appreciate with the Star Wars films is I'm sure there is an audience for these things. Mm. If they did like a KOTOR series, the Fall of Darth Revan and the Rise of Darth Bane.
Holy shit, yes, give me that.
You know, because they can tell like an unlimited amount of stories with the old universe before these Skywalkers.
Again, a whole galaxy.
Even during, like, you have there is the potential for hundreds of stories that do not involve a Skywalker.
And that's what I appreciate about Marvel. Like I said, always bringing things back to Marvel right now. They own the IP for Star Wars. They have the Star Wars comic. And then the Han Solo, Princess Leia stuff takes place after New Hope. The Lando stuff doesn't even involve the OG three. And it's just Lando stealing from the Emperor. Or how the Chewbacca story, he is separated from Han and is trying to get rid of these slavers.
Or how the Dr. Aphra series, they haven't even brought up Darth. They've brought up Darth Vader once.
Yeah.
And it's just like, don't you think he's looking? He's like, oh, he doesn't even know he's looking for me. He doesn't even know I'm alive right now.
Yeah, there's an unlimited amount of stories to be told. And same with kind of like Harry Potter. It's like, give me the story of the first wand maker. Or give me the story,
yeah, the story of Ollivander.
The tales of the three brothers, like mm-hmm. a full story of them.
And that's why I enjoyed
ties back to that main story,
Fantastic though. Beast is there was not a single Potter in that movie.
Yeah.
It did not go back to the Potter dynasty.
All we know.
Star Wars goes back to the Skywalker dynasty. Yeah.
All we know is like Newt Scamander is the father of Rolf or grandfather of Rolf who eventually marries Luna. Like that's the only thing. Yeah. Really big connection. Or the Lestrange family, you know, Star Wars, and it's actually under that future discussion questions,
yeah,
that I put is like, can there be a Star Wars movie that will not involve the Skywalkers? And we're just gonna save that. We're not gonna talk about it right now,
right?
Because I think it's an interesting point.
We'll hold on to it in our little jar,
and that's why
next to the fucking
with side
jar.
Movies, they are always going to connect somehow, some way. Because if you don't have that tiny little thread,
it's not going to draw in the mainstream.
Yeah,
audience.
It goes that's back to. Reason.
I see why it's done. Yeah. I just wish it wasn't.
It goes back to my discussion when we talked about best stories in video games with BioShock. For 99% of the game, I did not know why they called it a BioShock game until they had that little tie-in at the end.
I don't even know if it's a little tie-in. I think it's more reveal of,
but
like, oh, this is how it fits into the universe.
Right. But they could have taken that ending. Changed it, got rid of the connections to Rapture.
We're fine on time.
Called it something different, and it still would have been a fantastic game. But they had that Rapture tie-in. They had the
lighthouse.
But
that made the game
it made it so much better.
Right, it made it better, but by connecting it to this massive universe that you're familiar with.
And that's kind of like one of the things along the lines of the new Metal Gear IP that's coming out. Why are they calling it Metal Gear if it doesn't involve Snake or the story of any of the operatives?
Well, I mean,
or
they
the
called the Raiden story Metal Gear Rising.
Well, because Raiden's a main character for Metal Gear 3. You know, he and Snake were going along.
And his story was established in 4 to where Revengeance could happen.
Oops, sorry, Steve.
You're good. Yeah. But I get why side movies or even side stories or whatever always connect back to the main property somehow is to make that connection of that's right, this is part of this established universe that I know and love.
Yeah, and I mean, granted, Rogue One is a pre-sequel, so it does have to involve these characters in some major way. Like seeing Tarkin on screen, I'm like, holy shit. Or some of the other Easter eggy characters, like when Bail Organa came out with the Princess Leia theme in the background, I'm like, holy shit. Or Mon Mothma sitting there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, these are like I said, I was watching Rogue One. And I almost cried like 4 times because I was so excited by everything that was happening. And then even the end, the fact that, like I said, it literally takes place hours before New Hope. And then I get to fucking
ending, though.
Say to Steve, fuck you, I'm right.
No, you didn't say fuck you, I'm right. You said get fucked, that is all.
Yeah.
Yeah, saying that to Steve, you know, it made me a little chipper, but it's like, that's the only way that movie could have ended. Like, as a narrative experience, that was the only way in my mind for that movie to end. And like, you know, there's a few theories out there that say otherwise.
We really gotta stop talking about Rogue One. When
but
we're gonna ruin all...
In the same vein, I'm sure everyone that listens to us has seen Rogue One, so they know what
I'm
talking about.
No, I'm just saying, we really need to stop.
Yeah, because otherwise we're going to have a
full-blown discussion on it.
I'm going to see it 3 more times, don't worry.
We're going to rehash these same topics in 2 weeks.
But it's like, you know, even the appearance of Vader or the lady in white at the end really did not matter to the narrative experience of Jyn or any of the others, in my eyes. So it's like, I did not necessarily see that as a tie-in to like the Skywalker dynasty, but more as the story of these characters is sealed by the Force. Mm-hmm. So we can move on to other things. That's my opinion.
You're one with the Force and the Force is with you.
It's the best line in the entire movie. In the other one, it's like, I'm blind. Why are you back?
That was so fucking really. Are you kidding me? I'm blind. I'm like, they're making blind fun of it. Puns. I love it.
Yeah. Or, you know, that part of the novelization that I sent in the group chat this morning. It's like, I can't see what's happening. And it's like, oh. So this brings us, talking about narrative experiences, brings us to our comic book club title this week. We Three by Grant Morrison and Frank Finally Wheatley.
Finally got around to it.
I was about to fucking cry at those last like five pages. I was literally tearing up while reading, and I'm like, no.
A book that's 107 pages long is the most emotional thing that, you know, and that's why I picked it. It's like everyone, because I posed the question in CCBE, is like, what comment, one thing would you like to propose to this? And everyone's like, this is one of the most emotionally draining experiences in my life. And the funny thing was, is like, they were all pet owners too.
That's it. I've owned pets. I've had to go through the pain of putting them down. And mm-hmm. when you see that and it's all happening, you're like, oh no. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they gave them the ability to talk made it worse because,
am I a good dog?
Yeah. Because they were simple thoughts.
I think what made it they were the worst part that, about it is, you know, they weren't strays. They weren't, nobody owned them. Yeah, they were just lost, and then they were taken away.
They knew the concept of home.
Yeah.
And that's all they wanted.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And again, the fact that they just had these simple thoughts of, am I good? A good dog? Bad dog?
Smelly human.
Yeah. The cat was an asshole to humans because that's cats. And the bunny just...
Cats can be lovable.
They can, but...
But, dude, the bunny, like, being one of the most emotional parts when the pit bull came and, like, just ripped it apart. Yeah,
it dropped a little pellet bomb out of its butthole. Like, or even when the farmer ran into the bunny, and the bunny's just sitting there like, am I home? Can I go home? And just talking about home, and the farmer's freaked out and shoots the rabbit in the face
mm-hmm.
because he doesn't understand, but the whole time the rabbit's just thinking... Are you going to be my new home?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you have these simple thoughts from these animals that you just want to love, that they just want to be loved.
Yeah.
But they can't because of what has been done to them
mm-hmm.
because they've been weaponized and they can't control it. They're just using mm-hmm. their natural instincts that are amplified by this.
I mean, even the scientists the whole time, they were just like, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck did we do?
Yeah. Like, when the original, like the big scientists were like they're going to be decommissioned. They need to be.
It was all the military that are just,
they're just weapons. They're not things. They're not actual living, breathing animals that just want love and a home. Like, they're weapons that we can do whatever we want to with.
It's kind of interesting. Like, I've seen so many different variations of that story of the military. They want some sort of new weapon that doesn't put humans in harm's way, but it always comes back to, you want to, they try to separate that whole thought of, oh, they don't matter. And the whole point is, no, these things are, they have their own desires and feelings. Like, you're never going to take that away. And, right.
And even the main doctor, who at first was like, they're just going to be decommissioned, not put down, not anything like that. Like, the humane way of putting it, it's decommissioned, like they're just machinery. But then you get towards the end and then you realize he's realized what they are.
Yeah, like the fact that these animals can get all of their gear removed, which a homeless man was able to do without killing or hurting these animals. You know, the government agent's sitting there, and he's
Did the homeless man remove them? Or,
the
impression I got was they removed it themselves.
Yeah, to that
after the dog realized that it was broken.
Yeah, they started taking it off.
Yeah, but I think what humanized them to the scientists was the homeless man feeding them,
mm-hmm.
where he just went up to them like, yeah, you're a good dog. Here's some food. You're just an animal who's scared and alone. And the fact that he could walk out of there unharmed, untouched, really, shows like these aren't killing machines. They're just scared.
Yeah, the fact that it was you guys made them those machines. And that's what I appreciate about Grant Morrison the most, is that all of his stories are very much grounded in reality, except for one small thing that's twisted. And that's why I made you guys read this, is like, you know, these are my basic premise. These animals just want to go home. And then you look at the cover and it's like three robotic mechs and you're like,
what the fuck?
What are you making me read again? I'm like, it's a story about three animals that just want to find somewhere safe to belong and everything else. And it's like you said, it's one of the most emotionally gripping things I've ever read. One of our friends on Facebook was like, I read this in one sitting and it was a mistake because I just started crying at the end of it.
God, the fucking part where he's like, I'm a bad dog. Yeah, it's like, no.
Or, you know, like, after the train explodes and he pulls the conductor out of the water and he's just sitting there like, I'm a good dog. I did good. It's like, he just wants someone to tell him he's a good dog. But then you look back and yeah, he's like, oh, ripped in half and intestines pouring out. But the dog thought he was doing a good job because he's a dog. He just wants to be loved.
He's a dog.
And that's the thing. Like, the day you gave it to me, I went to my parents' house, and when I got home, I read the book, finished it in an hour, because I could not stop reading. Because I just, like, what's going to happen to them? Like, I need to know. I can't let this go unfinished.
I'm one for two and things for comic book club.
Yes. It's like, it was one of the best things I've ever read. Yeah. And, like, I wholeheartedly, when I saw the book and you guys kept going, good dog, and you're like, don't put that on me. It's like, I don't want to read this. It's going to destroy my heart.
Well, it's
funny. Going to fucking wreck me forever. And I read it, it's like, I'm glad I read this.
It's funny because way back when Comic Book Resources used to use that panel of Am I a Good Dog and say, Are comics good? For their weekly review kind of thing as like an inside joke to readers. But you know, it's surprising that this book hasn't received, you know, it's a 4-year-old book at this point, or 5 years at this, and it's like such a important story, but it hasn't reached like, you know, that huge groundbreaking thing. Like everything in Grant Morrison's collection of or his bibliography, everyone knows this shit is good. You know, but they stick to All-Star Superman. They stick to
Batman and Robin.
No, yeah, Batman and Robin to a degree. They stick to Animal Man, but like Grant Morrison does such careful work. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the reason why Wonder Woman Earth One took 2 years to come out. So, or anything Grant Morrison does, Multiversity being something he pitched in 2009, he does all this careful planning. And he makes you feel for these things. Like, Grant Morrison exists on a different existential plane than everyone else. And We 3 was optioned for a movie. But I just feel like it would not work
in
that narrative medium.
I don't think. Granted, it's short, so I don't think they could. They'd have to stretch a lot of things out.
It's also super brutal.
Yeah, and, you know, they could easily, they could tone down the gore, make it possible in a movie. But I feel like they'd have to stretch so much stuff out and mm-hmm. add so many unnecessary things.
The first act being them being fitted for the machines or something, like, or them learning how to talk.
Like you'd lose so much of the message or the impact that the story has by being that short and just showing you one perspective.
Yeah.
They show you the animal's perspective and on occasion the military when they're getting
destroyed.
When they're setting something up that will affect the animals in a big way. If they made a movie out of it, they'd have to focus more on like the military side of things and more talking and planning and all of that. It's like, that's not the message of the book. It's the animals trying to find their home.
It's kind of interesting.
You couldn't make like an hour and a half, 2 hour movie out of mainly the animals just saying the three, four things over and over again.
Mm-hmm. What's kind of interesting is I feel like animosity is has a very similar tone and similar ideas behind it, since that whole book is just mainly like, oh, a lot of animals feel betrayed by humans the way they've been treated. And this is kind of We Three very similar to that that kind of idea of, we really shouldn't treat animals like this. Like, why are we assholes to them?
Yeah,
just want to be good dogs.
It is super hyper violent in that fashion.
Well, yeah, in the first two pages you have someone literally getting ripped to shreds by bullets.
Yeah. So one of the things, and like, you know, this is one of the fact that Grant Morrison makes the fugitive animals like the most human things in the story. The fact that you have these military members, you cannot see them more than machines, or the sciences, you cannot see them more as machines.
They, at first they saw them as machines, and then they learned they could talk and have thoughts.
Yep.
That's what separated it, is the minute they had their own speech and thoughts is when it became too human for them.
Yeah, and like I said, it's one of the most humanizing things in the story, and the animals being so human really kind of like puts a lot of moral ambiguity to the entire story. And like the last thing that I'll say is I love this story. It's very amazing. Not for
weak hearts. Not for faint of heart.
Not for children.
The one person who I think could pull this movie off, and I just pulled it up on my phone because I was looking at adaptations. You know, it was, this book is way older than I thought. It's like maybe a decade old now.
Oh, wow.
It, like in 2006, New Line picked up the script for it, for the rights for it. And then, you know, it just went into developmental hell since like 2008. At one point, like the Kung Fu Panda director was attached to it. Huh. And then it just nothing else. And then last year, James Gunn said he would be interested in creating a We 3 movie. And I think that's the only person who could do justice to this concept.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But yeah, I mean, We 3 is just amazing, beautiful story, in my opinion.
Heartbreaking, and brutal.
I'm glad I made you guys read it.
They are a good dog. Yeah. He's a good dog.
One of the things I want to do with like book club is like take just like indie stuff, even though Vertigo's not really indie, but like Grant Morrison.
The smaller stories.
Yeah. We all know who Grant Morrison is to a degree. We know the things he writes. The next time it might be my turn, I'm going to say we're going to read Claus, which is a Grant Morrison interpretation of Santa.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm pretty pumped for drawing names out of a hat. So, Steve, since, you know, this is our third book for book club, we started this concept before we picked you up. What is your pick for our next title? If not,
right now, this is a maybe, but I'm thinking Maus, M-A-U-S.
Art Spiegel.
Yes, which is a telling of, it's essentially a fictional biographical telling of his life during the Nazi regime, being a...
Doesn't it have multiple volumes?
Two.
Yep.
Most of the time when you see Maus on the shelf, it's entire the collected thing. Thing now.
Yeah. So it will be a bit of a read. Again, this is a maybe. If something else comes up, then it'll change.
But how about we let the audience decide? No one talks to us. Yeah. Jim, how about we let you decide? Or Tim?
But I've always wanted to read it. It's always been...
You haven't read it before?
I have not, actually. Oh, man. I've seen snippets here and there, but...
It's like one of those essentials.
Yeah, it's been on my list to read for a long time now.
What's really cool, too, is that CCBE did Maus last month as their... Book club.
Like a few months ago, I think.
Yeah, a few months ago, so we can hit them up, or at least hit Matt up, who is definitely interested in that. And then I think there's a movie too. I don't know, like an animated featurette. But yeah, let's do it. Maus.
Maus.
Yeah. So join us in a month or so. I mean, we said the same thing about We 3, but
that got
we did like hell. Three live shows, picked up Steve, did a bunch of other shit.
It's probably going to get delayed again because we have a discussion, a big discussion next week.
Two big discussions.
A big discussion the week after. Who knows what's going to happen the week after that?
There's still
another Star Wars movie just drops randomly. It's like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
here's the Boba Fett movie. You thought it was all canceled.
I'm glad.
I would literally cry.
I'm glad it got canceled because Josh Trank was attached to it. And after Fantastic Four, you know, just small little details. But Chronicle was amazing. But Josh Trank, come back.
If a Boba Fett movie did get announced that it was coming out in 3 weeks, I would fucking throw some bows at some kids. I'm going to go see the Boba Fett movie. Puh, no, you're not. I'm going. Pull it's my ticket.
Pull Bethesda. It's like, oh, by the way, it's out now.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah. So thank you. Not thank you. I was going to say
as always.
No, not as always.
Thank you for listening.
As we come to the end of the year, we like to think about what we're thankful for.
Is this the start of the clip show? This is like the 5 hour long podcast now.
As we go.
No, that's only when people die. That's that montage.
I hope you had the time of your life.
I'll bring my guitar next week then. Maybe we could just start like a dildo discussion, like thinking outside the long box.
Then the
bad dick.
God, have you, the last episode I listened to, they called us out on
what
a lot
did we
of
do?
No,
we,
they one.
Did they call us out for us calling them out on
I
the
mean,
dildo
John
talk?
Brought up the whole thing of how, yeah, we're like, your whole show, like, intro to your show is just dildo talk now. And then there was something else that Gabe was like, oh, so you talk about the Z2 pod with the Z2 podcast about that?
I think we've had John on more episodes now than they have in like the past month.
No, Grant, they've been
they came
a lot
they released
recently.
Two episodes in a month. I was shocked and overjoyed. Those guys are literally like the funniest people I know, and I have to pull over sometimes in my car because I'm laughing so hard.
They talk about some dumb shit.
I love them. Gabe, you're my favorite. You really are, even though you may not listen to us. But John, if you're
Gabe
listening, Gabe who doesn't listen,
steal another thing.
God, there was a movie I wanted to talk about, and I can't remember off the top of my head. But maybe we should finally bring out movie night this week.
So many good movies to watch.
I know.
So many things.
We can watch Kingsglaive or
Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods. Whatever is gonna make. I think we should watch Cabin in the Woods just to make Zach freak out.
Or Cabin in the Woods.
And we should also start a Let's Play series of Until Dawn.
No, man. Outlast. It's free on Xbox Live Gold right now.
That's true. All right.
Too spoopy.
As always, we would like to thank you guys for listening to a brand new episode of the Z2 podcast. You can find us on the Facebook, the Twitter, the website, 40. Z2 podcast. We've hit 40 episodes, amazing milestone of 8 times 5. We can't wait until we can multiply some other numbers together. Next week is going to be a prime number, so you know we can't multiply two things, which kind of sucks. You know, it's a bummer, but you can find us on our social media with Z2 Podcast. You can find us at our Gmail, z2podcasts@gmail.com. And you can always check us out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. I almost said Google Radio. And you can make our Christmas by leaving us a review. You can leave us a 5-star review if you think we're great. You can even leave a 4-star review, but we really like that 5 because you guys are so cool. And we want to give you guys 5-star contents. So don't rate us any lower than that.
So tell us.
You got it.
If you want us to improve on something, let us know what we should
improve. If you
improve
give us 4 stars, you're going to get 4 stars.
Sorry about last week's episode being stupidly low. I will make sure that doesn't happen.
Dear God, yet. I had a heart attack while I was driving because it went from our podcast to Greg Miller yelling. And I'm like, ugh, the volume content jumped. If you guys want to check out anything else, if you want us to hire a fourth member that's like unapologetically Marvel, which we're not, don't let us know that. We refuse.
Also, because you always forget this every single week, our YouTube channel.
Yes, you can also check us out on YouTube. We have 2 Let's Play videos. We have a
third one is in the works currently.
Yeah, we have our Pokemon Nuzlocke, which we're going to do more of soon. We have our
Overcooked,
which we legitimately got mad at each other the last time we filmed Overcooked, so we may not release that ever. And then, are you working on Worms now?
I'm working on Overcooked 2? Part 2, okay. And then Worms after that.
Don't expect an Overcooked Part 3.
not for a while.
Not till we relearn how to play the game.
Yeah.
Not until we learn how to be friends again.
Yeah, and you know, we had like an amazing, cool Christmas content filmed.
God,
you guys
that was
filmed,
recorded. It was a lot of fun, and we hope we can release it.
It was like half filmed. Oh, we can release it. We'll just have to put so many disclaimers and explicits on there that
I just like, man, I literally said like 3 times we can't release this.
Gotta tell you now, it's good not God. For the faint of heart.
Yeah, this is what happens.
If you are easily offended, which I don't know why you're listening
fuck
to this
you.
If you are. I was waiting for you to say something.
Oh, fuck Ant-Man.
There it is.
There it is.
If you're the faint of heart, fuck Ant-Man. There you go. I had to buy an Ant-Man Blu-ray for a
Christmas,
family member. Yeah. Shit. I had to touch Ant-Man.
Oh, it's going to be like the demon
Christmas,
touching holy water.
Christmas Werewolves was... It was like take thinking outside the long box and multiply it by 3.
And multiply it by Adam.
We also, but just multiply it by Adam.
Yeah.
Which you'll recognize from Overcooked Part 1.
Yeah. And it's a lot of cool stuff. We actually have some other things in mind too after filming like or not even filming, just playing video games together off key, not even trying to be funny. And it was like some of the stupidest. How much do you remember of that? Were you okay?
I remember most of it.
Do you remember the chair being placed on top of you?
Yes, I remember.
Do you remember Rainbow Fart?
Yes, I remember Rainbow Fart.
I learned that I was one of the funniest people, even though I did not win a single game.
Yes.
Because I wanted to be funny.
You that's won the how popular vote. That's all that matters. Yep.
So thank you guys, as always. You bring us so much joy listening every week. Give us a little bit of joy with a review of anything. Thumbs up a video. Give us five stars. Go burn a copy of Ant-Man. Don't do that. Please do not do that.
But burning is not a good thing.
No, like just burn like a statue of Ant-Man that someone spent like $100 on.
Or send it to Steven.
Or if you really do like Ant-Man, just relax. You're fine. I at this point, I say fuck Ant-Man as a joke. And I haven't said it this week, so fuck me even more.
You just said it like 30 seconds ago.
You know, when you spend a lot of time hating something, you just completely white out for a second.
It just all becomes one.
It all becomes one with the rainbow fart. Which you drew hashtag with one color. Fart. You have two colors.
No, I used the two colors.
No, he did use the two colors.
I just had brown.
That's why I thought it was literally shit on a dick.
That was a wheelbarrow. Oh, no, Iroh, is anyone else turned on by this?
No.
Just me. We got to do that. Man. We got to do that.
We have to get me drunk again and then play...
Drawful.
Drawful.
All right.
Or fibbage. Either
Let's just
way.
End. Let's fucking end. We're done. Thank you, guys.
That's it.
Peace out.
Stay tuned for a dope-ass Christmas special.
Stay tuned. We're going to steal another member from the Thinking Outside Long Box.
Gabe's the next target.
We'll just take Gabe, and he'll still call us out.
Yep. We'll assimilate them slowly but surely.
Yes,
one
yes,
of us. One of oh, us. God.
All right. Love us. You, Internet.
Wrong song.